The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
877-PLANNER is our number. Oh, we're on. That's right. Hi. Welcome back to the program. It's time for another hour already. I can't believe it. Another hour getting started. Bucket Strategy Investing. It's another hour of the best in money information, I do believe. We're standing by once again, ready to answer your phone calls and your emails. Professor Plum here with me. I'm Johnny Dean, back again from Lucia Capital Group, which is what we do every day on this program. Professor Plum, our main brain trust advisor. More topics to cover this hour. So, hey, ride along with us, would you? That's a polite request. If you got a money question of any kind, you can certainly take part in the forum. The way to do that is to give us a call right now. That's the quickest way to do it, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Room on the phones right now. In fact, all the lines are open here at the top of the hour, so if you want to get on board, do so right now. Add to the stack of emails we'll be reading on the program this hour. You do that by going over to our website, wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page and type in your email. Submit it. Very easy to do. Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, returning for this hour, courtesy of the people of Lucia Capital Group. Now, we try on this show to deliver to you the strategies that are right for you, right? Money strategies that can help you get through retirement. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air, you can always call Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. You know this, that your situation is unique to you, and you need to find out if your individual retirement goals and needs are being met. Nothing generic here. With access to a network of brain trust advisors across the country, the folks at Lucia Capital Group can help you out. Again, off the air, 800-644-1150. On the air, room right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. If you don't call, we talk. And actually, right now, I want to bring this up. I mentioned this last hour, and I'll say it again. You had told me about, well, we talk a lot about Social Security and the whole idea of the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset. Mm-hmm. We do get a lot of calls on that, and it affects a whole lot of people. For those that don't know what it is, Professor Plum, if you're covered with if you have a pension, you're receiving a pension from a job where you did not pay into, in other words, you didn't pay FICA or Medicare at that job.
Mostly FICA. Medicare.
That's right. Medicare is something different, yeah. But FICA, we'll call it FICA.
It's all about FICA.
It is. Thank you. You can have your own benefits reduced or...
Social Security.
Yes, Social Security.
Not the pension. The pension doesn't get reduced.
No,
Social Security gets reduced.
That's right. Well, then you do it because I'm confusing people. Go right ahead.
Well, anytime that you have a pension from work where you did not pay into Social Security, but you also had employment where you did pay into Social Security, but you didn't do it for 30 years paying into Social Security, you're going to have an issue with the amount of Social Security that you have been projected to receive. A lot of us received or used to receive quite often every year that statement that said, if we keep working till 62, 66, 67, whatever your full retirement age or 70, we are expected to receive a Social Security benefit of X. Then we get out to retirement and we've worked for a school system, we were working for a hospital that didn't pay into Social Security. We earned a pension from some employment where we did not pay into Social Security, and the check that we're receiving from Social Security does not match what we were projected to receive. And it has to do with something called the windfall elimination provision. And then on the other side, we've been a teacher our whole life, law enforcement, whatever the case may be, where we are earning a pension but not paying FICA, not paying into Social Security, but we're married to somebody. And you hear on this show that if you're married to somebody that has a Social Security benefit and you're at least 62 years of age, you could be eligible for a spousal retirement benefit or, worst case, a survivor benefit from that person's work in the Social Security system or work paying into the Social Security system. And unfortunately, the person dies and you go into Social Security and say, hey, I want the survivor pension. And they say, well, you have a pension already from some employment where you did not pay into Social Security. And therefore, you're not going to receive all or any of the survivor benefit from your late spouse.
That's what's called the government.
That's the government pension offset. Yeah. So these two issues are considered very unfair by anybody who's basically being hit by it. And a lot of people are being hit by it. So there is a movement to try to get rid of the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset.
Kind of a, what is this, is a grassroots movement somewhere where
there is.
I imagine there's a lot of there are a lot of teachers and maybe law enforcement officers to some degree, but there are states, quite a few in fact, where
I think there's 11 states where the teachers do not pay into Social Security, so that, and some of them are fairly good sized states, California being one of them,
yeah,
which has a lot of teachers, a lot of people affected by the WEP and the government pension offset. Law enforcement in many cases and fire safety members do not pay into Social Security for municipalities, many municipalities across the entire United States.
And there were some, although they're getting older now, that worked under what's called the Federal Employee Retirement System, FERS.
FERS does pay.
I'm sorry, Civil.
CSRS, Civil Service Retirement System.
They changed it to FERS.
Yes.
Yes, Civil Service, the old Civil Service Retirement.
They did not pay into Social Security. Yes. Even though they worked for the federal government, they didn't pay into Social Security.
Right.
They paid into their own system, the Civil Service Retirement System. And if they have work outside of their federal employment, which a lot of people did. A lot of people that work for the government, you know, came out of the military and they paid into Social Security. Anybody since 1954 that was in the military paid into the Social Security system, FICA. So a lot of people have paid into it, got their 40 credits or more, but then went into another career, another employment where they did not pay into Social Security, but they earned a pension. They're going to have their Social Security cut.
All right, so what are these people asking now? They can't just go up there and demand, well, maybe they are.
Well, they're saying, we paid into it. We have every right to it. You cannot cut us. We've paid it. Just like everybody else paid it, we want our money.
All right, so what are some of the things that they're saying on the website? Because I know a lot of it, Professor, is wrong. I mean, you read some of them.
Well, there was one about a gentleman. There was one, she blindsided me on this one.
Oh.
One of the comments was about a gentleman who is saying that he's being unfairly, you know, specifically his area, the state that he lived in, were being unfairly singled out because of the windfall elimination. And his benefit went from $1,200 or $1,600 projected to $400 a month. Now, that's not the windfall elimination provision. He's saying it is the windfall elimination. The windfall elimination provision will reduce a benefit. And if you have a projected benefit of $1,600 a month, you're looking at it, you're going, and you get out to 62, 66, whatever the age projected, the benefit projected to be, and you're getting a reduction, it will not be a three-quarter, a 75% reduction. It will be, at most for this person, 400 and change. 400 in small side change, maybe $420 a month. It is not a $1,200 reduction. It is designed to reduce it by about 55% for low incomes, maxed out at $400. So it's capped at $400, $420 or so. So it's not a $1,200 reduction. So I don't know what this gentleman's talking about. Something else went on in his benefit. Something else is reducing, if he actually is receiving $400 a month. Something else is going on. Maybe the pension benefit that he got from Social Security was done 20 years ago, and that assumed that he continue working for 20 more years in the Social Security system. And remember, Social Security is based on 35 years of earnings. And so if you have a lot of zeros, it's going to come way down. So if they're projecting it at one level, but you have a whole different work history, the projection will be wrong, just on its face. Forget the windfall elimination provision. We saw this happen to a lady that called us several months back. She wanted to know why the Social Security system was stealing her benefit. She was working at $100,000 a year. She was 45 years old. And they showed her benefit at full retirement age to be like $2,200, $2,300 a month. And then, unfortunately, she got let go in the 2008 downturn. The only job she could pick up after that was at about $50,000 a year. And so from 46 to 66, she was only going to be making $50,000 in the projection. The new projection came in and showed that she wasn't going to be getting $2,300 a month. She was going to be getting like $1,700 or $1,800 a month. She wanted to know how they were stealing her money. Well, the projection that you're receiving from Social Security is based on taking today's earnings and projecting them forward. And if you've got a very high income today, projecting it forward shows a lot of high years of income. If you have high income today and you go to a low income or you stop working early, it will have an effect on the ultimate projection of what Social Security is going to be paying you. So you do, unfortunately, you do have to understand a little bit about how Social Security is created as far as the benefit, 35 years. Now, the problem with the windfall elimination and the government pension offset is, and whether it's fair or not fair, Social Security is designed to replace more of a low-income earner's pay than a high-income earner's pay. Somebody who makes $20,000 a year is going to get a large portion of that replaced for their entire work history, is going to get a much higher percentage of that replaced by Social Security than somebody who makes $100,000. And most of us can agree that that's a fair situation.
It is. Now, I would say
that... I think somebody
who
makes 20 is going to get about a 60 or 70% of their income replaced by Social Security. Somebody that makes 100 is going to get about 30% of their income replaced by Social Security. That's the way it works. It's designed to replace a higher income from the low income side than the high income side.
I would suggest that if you got rid of the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset, none of that would change.
Well, no, but that's where the rationale, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's where the rationale to cut a benefit for somebody who has a pension from another source comes into play, because that person that has the higher source has had a higher income through their working career.
Yeah, but the Social Security portion.
So it's not fair to the low-paid person. Is that snarky enough?
See, once again, it makes no sense, but okay.
And that's what they're saying. The cost to get rid of it is nothing.
Get rid of it. That's all I'd say. All right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. All right, well, hang on. 877-PLANNER, our number. P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your calls and talking to you about your money and retirement income and all that stuff. A lot of challenges and a lot of strategies that we present to you on this program. Also in person, I should remind you, and I know I like to do this because, you know, we want people to show up. We had a lot of people last week in Phoenix. We're going to get some more people, a lot more here in Portland this Saturday at the Retirement Income Strategies Workshops featuring Professor Rick Plum in person, the 3D version. And Terry Keyes from Lucia Capital Group and the local Brain Trust Advisors in Portland. You want to go? You should go. I would advise it if you're a longtime listener, if you're a brand new listener or viewer of this program. You can learn a lot of stuff at this these workshops, a couple of hours, and you can get your questions answered. So Portland happens this Saturday. If you want to join the Brain Trust in Portland, you go to wealthed.com, our website. Just type your name in, say who's coming. Here's a minute, how many people are coming. We'll reserve a seat for you, and that's all there is to it. No cost to it at all. Just show up and learn about retirement income strategies. So Portland this Saturday. After that, a couple of weeks later, Houston, Texas, April 9th. And then at the end of April, the 30th, Santa Clara, California. So Portland, Houston, and Santa Clara, those are the next three. We're working on possibly doing some more in May. If you want to find out where, when, and how, once again, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. As I said, it's all free. 877-PLANNER, our number. Okay, one last thing before I get to some emails. You found what you were what I was asking for on this
the GPO specifically
on the WEP and the GPO, whatever one of these websites is that's trying to eliminate it, which we happen to agree with, by the way.
Right, but what I don't like is when people take a little bit of information and completely blow it out of proportion and make unrealistic assumptions from it, and because it doesn't help your case. There's enough information, in my opinion, to get rid of the WEP and the GPO
without having to make stuff up.
Without making this stuff up.
Yeah.
And so the report said that at least 615 retirees were affected by the GPO, the government pension offset.
615,000
retirees were affected by the government pension offset. The government pension offset affects individuals who have a pension from work not covered by Social Security, but who are also eligible otherwise, would otherwise be eligible for a spousal or survivor benefit from somebody else's work experience. 74% of those affected have lost all of their Social Security benefits, not all of theirs, all of the survivor or...
This is what they're saying?
Yes. They wouldn't lose their own. The government pension offset does not affect your own Social Security benefit. It affects the benefit you would receive from somebody else's work record. 81% of those affected are women, and that would, in my opinion, make sense because I believe, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but I think there are more women teachers than men teachers.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's 81%.
It seems to affect more teachers than...
Teachers are the big issue issue.
Right.
Women affected by the GPO have lower pensions than the men affected, and in addition, they lose more. Well, that statement is incorrect because the lower your pension is, the less the offset is. The offset is directly proportional to your pension. If you have a lower pension, you have a lower offset because the offset is an amount equal to 2/3 of your pension. So the higher your pension, the higher the offset, you know, to a point where you could potentially lose the entire benefit from your ex, from your spouse or your late spouse. So the lower the pension, the less the impact. They're saying it backwards. The GPO is a direct attack on the family.
This is, wait, no, listen, you're reading this portion now.
I'm reading a spin statement from a group trying to repeal it, which I agree with repealing it, but
so their
I don't
statement,
like the statement.
Their statement is what again?
The GPO, government pension offset, is a direct attack against the family. Well, most 70-year-olds, retirees, don't have families. So I don't see how this is an attack on the family, because while you're working, you're not affected by it. You're still eligible. The kids are still eligible. Everybody who is otherwise eligible would get it. It's only when you're receiving a pension that you would be affected by the government pension offset. So unless you're having families later in life, it's not an attack on the family. Then it says parents who stay home and care for children usually lose all of their spousal benefits. Well, by definition, if you are staying home and raising the kids, you're not working. You don't have a pension from work not covered by Social Security.
So there's nothing to offset.
So if you don't have the pension, if you stayed home, there's no offset. So that statement is
I don't know how they got that so completely wrong.
And so those are the kind of statements that tend to tick me off.
Well,
because there are enough true statements about it that do affect everybody,
yes,
that could be
exactly
used to offset it. And the one big one that I think is the most important is it has a very, very minor impact on the actual cost of everything. It's just not a big cost to repeal it. I mean, not the cost of repealing. If it was repealed, it's not a big cost to pay the benefits that people
earn. Give anybody who, if you worked and you as they say, paid into the system, there is no real benefit to anyone, whether you made a lot of money or you were on the lower end of the wage scale. There's no benefit to anyone to take those benefits away that were technically earned by all definitions of the Social Security system. It doesn't help anybody. All it does is hurt people. And if that's their goal, which apparently seems to be the goal of these elected officials, if that's their goal, then they've succeeded. But it's doing no good. I mean, pass a law that does good. All right.
That's a good one, John.
You know what? You get rid of the weapon, the GPO. You start giving people the Social Security that they've earned.
But
then that's going to do some good.
You see, then people would start receiving
more benefits
than Congress intended. That was the rationale they used to take away the restricted application a couple years from now, and the file and suspend in another month.
It's like you have too much money. I'm sorry. I know what's best for you. Okay.
It's just
that.
Yeah, the marketing of these repeals just kind of make me mad.
Well, because, again, I hate to say it, they don't know what they're talking about.
They don't, but they're
saying the cause is right, but the
we're doing it for the children. We're doing it for the family.
Throwing things like children and family.
And of course, people will vote for it if you say that.
Yes. What about the children? I was waiting for that. Think of the children. All right, 877-PLANNER. Let's take a couple of emails here. Let's get to Jennifer in Wheatland, California. Is it wise to claim 10 on my W-4, I assume exemptions, and then place the additional income into my 403B? So what Jennifer's looking to do, Professor Plum, obviously, is to get a higher check.
Have less withholding.
Withholding and place that extra into a 403B.
Well, that probably is dangerous to claim 10. Because if you were to put some money into a 403B, by its very nature, it's a tax-deductible issue, and it will reduce your withholding just by putting the money into the 403B, or a 401K for that matter. So by claiming 10, you're going to reduce your withholding a lot. And by then taking that money and putting it into it, let's say you reduce your withholding by $400 a month, and you take that $400 a month and put it into a 403B. Now your taxes have gone down, true. But your withholding has still gone down significantly more because you're going to, when you put the money in the 403B, it reduces the withholding as well. So rather than just coming up with an arbitrary number and saying, I want to claim 10, let's look at what it is you're going to actually owe. Do you normally get very, very large refunds? If you normally get very, very large refunds, then increasing your withholding exemptions can make a lot of sense. Because then you get more in your check and you'll get less of a refund. But if you're sitting in a situation where you basically break even every year, maybe you're claiming two or three exemptions right now, and every year you get a refund of a couple $100, but not a huge number. Increasing it to 10, you'll end up having to pay a lot. And if you pay too much, you end up having to pay an under withholding penalty. So I don't think just changing it to 10 is a good idea.
Yeah, there is an under withholding penalty. Maybe when we come back, we'll just tell you what that means, what that is. I'll get into a little bit of the safe harbor and all that stuff. 877-PLANNER, our number. We've got lines open, so give us a call. If you got money questions, Brain Trust is standing by, ready to answer those questions for you right here on Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean and Professor Rick Plum coming right back. That it will. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, we're here for you. I got room on the phones right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. And don't forget, coming up, if you happen to be watching us live today, there's another edition of the Social Security Show. It happens every Tuesday, and it's only at WealthEd.com, featuring me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum. It's kind of like us doing this show, except we talked only about Social Security. We've been talking about the WEP and the GPO and all that. We probably won't have time to get into it on the next edition, but we will be taking your calls. We'll be taking your emails and talking to you about laws, strategies, etc. It's every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Only at WealthEd.com, WealthEd.com, the Social Security Show. And I should mention, too, there's a hotline that you can call. Oddly enough, we're very clever. The Social Security Hotline. Write it down if you want. 800-838-0483. If you're watching TV, it's on the screen. And you can leave your question right there at our voicemail. It's an answering machine we have set up. Might be an old dictaphone. I don't know. But anyway, leave a message on there and leave us as much information as you can. We will take your message and we will play it back on the show and answer it for you. It's kind of a neat way to get involved and to sort of make it interactive. So, again, Social Security Show. You can also email us, 877-PLANNER. Before I get to the next one, Ned in Ryerson again? Oh, North Dakota. Okay, there you go. Just because we were talking about this. You talked about the withholding. And I want to cover safe harbor rules in a second, too, Professor Plum. I'm 23. I have two jobs. Combined, I make $32,000 a year, claim single. I was very surprised at the lack of refund I received this year. Is this because my part-time job is taxing me in a 10% bracket while all my income is in the 15?
Well, first off, all of your income is not in the 15. But it does have a lot to do with the withholding that is happening. Each company does not know about the other company.
Well, he goes on. I don't mind receiving a smaller refund, but I don't want to owe next year. Assuming my employment stays the same this year, do I have anything to worry about this year? Where can I buy a better bracket? Do you guys sell them? Thanks.
Yeah, it
love
is
your
March
show.
Madness
thanks,
time,
Ned.
So
yeah.
Brackets are available everywhere, but unfortunately, you can't just go out and buy a tax bracket.
No, okay, so I know what the problem is because I have a similar situation in my place.
Let's say, you know, if you're making $10,000 from a job, the employer doesn't know anything about your other employment, doesn't know about your other withholdings or anything. So they just base it on what would an average person who makes $10,000 a year pay in taxes? Well, a single individual would pay nothing in taxes on $10,000. So you're making, you know, you've got three jobs, let's just say it, and each one makes $10,000. You make $30,000 a year, but not any one single job is withholding any money because job A says, hey, $10,000, he doesn't owe any taxes. Job B is saying $10,000, he doesn't owe any taxes. Job C is saying the same thing, but combined, you owe taxes. And so the withholding at the job level is only looking at that one job. So in your case, maybe you have a $10,000 job and a $22,000 job. The $22,000 job is saying, you know what, at $22,000, he owes this much money, so each paycheck should be withheld, and we're withholding based on the income we're seeing from this one job. So if you got a small refund last year and you expect to have the same income this year, you'll probably get a small refund again this year. If you owed money this year and you expect your income to be similar, then you're going to want to change your withholding. Now, you can change withholding. If you're already claiming zero exemptions, you're saying, I can't go negative, can I? Well, you can add a flat dollar amount to each paycheck. You can say, withhold as if I'm filing no exemptions, which means I'm going to pay the most tax that I can, withhold the most tax that I can based on the tables, and in addition, withhold another $50 a month or $50 a paycheck, whatever it is. Whatever it will get you to the point where for the refund or not owing the amount that you want to basically tailor your tax return to do it. So withholding is based on that job and the projection of an individual who makes that much money. You know, you can choose single, head of household, married, finally separately. They're going to look at the average person who's filing with that category, mm-hmm. who makes that amount of money in total. But you're not making that amount of money in total. You're making that amount of money yeah. plus another job, you know. And so between the different jobs, you're stacking them on top of each other. For an income tax purpose, you'll owe a little bit more in taxes than what the withholding is.
Yeah, and it happens too with married couples, where one
happens quite a bit with married couples
makes maybe quite a bit more than the other spouse. The lower earning spouse is going to have withholding based on what, right. you know, what they're earning, and the higher earning spouse is going to have, of course, withholding based on what they're mm-hmm. earning. But what's going to wind up happening is you're going to wind up having withheld too little.
If let's say the higher earning spouse makes 100, 150,000 a year, whatever the number is. And each year they get about, you know, they're about break even. They got their exemptions right where they want them to be, kind of.
Yeah.
And they get a small refund. And then their spouse goes to work and makes $20,000 a year, you know, or something. Goes out and starts getting their feet back in the workforce after raising kids. Well, the company that they're working for, they look at married filing a joint return, $20,000 a year. The average person doing that will only owe X amount of dollars in penalty. And so they may not even be doing any withholding. They may be doing very little withholding, because they're looking at it as this person's only
exactly.
making $20,000.
Right.
But that $20,000 is being stacked on top of the other spouse's 100, 150, and being taxed at 25%, maybe in some first state. So all of a sudden, what used to be a little bit of a refund
is a big tax bill.
It's a big tax bill.
Now,
John yells from practical experience.
Well, I mean, it happens, and it caught me off guard a couple of times. I'm used to it now, but yeah. it did.
And so you have to either adjust the withholding on the high wage earner. You have to adjust the withholding one way or the other. You don't want to pay so much in April when you file your return. There's two problems with paying a large amount in April. One is it stinks. I hate writing a check in April for a big amount of money. The other thing is if you don't withhold enough through the year, that money that comes out of your paycheck or your quarterly payments, if you do not pay into the system enough throughout the year to equal one of two specified amounts, you will owe a penalty.
Yeah, this is what I was going to have you talk about. I'm glad you brought it up. It's the under withholding penalty. I think a lot of people don't even know this exists.
And it's not a big penalty, but we don't like paying the taxes that we're required to pay, let alone a penalty tax that we can easily avoid.
So how does this work?
You have to withhold to avoid the penalty. You have to withhold the lower of two specific numbers. One number is 100% of what you paid in taxes last year. Not what you paid in April, but the total tax liability for the previous tax year. So look down your tax return, look for the line that says, this is your total tax. And as long as you withhold at least 100% of that number through this year, it doesn't mean you won't owe taxes in April if you made more this year, but it means you won't owe any penalties. Now, if your income last year was over $150,000, that 100% of last year's tax liability number is 110%. So you'd have to make sure you hit that. Now, what if you had a lot of income last year, and this year you don't have a lot of income? Well, you sure don't want to pay in 100% of last year's tax liability, so they do give you an out. They say you can withhold the lower of the 100 or 110% of last year's tax liability, or 90% of this year's actual tax liability. So as long as you are within 10% of this year's tax liability, you don't owe a penalty. Obviously, you'll owe the remainder of it when you file your return, but there won't be a penalty involved. So if your income was very high last year and very low or moderate this year, you'll want to base your withholding potentially on this year's tax projected liability. If your income this year is super high and last year it was moderate or low, you can get away from the penalty by just owing what you owed, or paying into what the system, just what you owed last year.
So penalty, what's the penalty? Let's say I paid $500.
It's like 3%.
So if I paid $500 short, I'm short $500 in taxes.
Right.
I don't meet the safe harbor for either one. I'm $500 in short. You think it's going to be what, a $15 penalty maybe?
It's not much because it's a 3% annualized payment, but they're going to look at it as some of the money should have come in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. So it's not a big deal. It's just an annoyance. It's just a nuisance. I mean, unless you just love giving the government money.
Well, how are you supposed to even know this, by the way? Let's say you're filling out your taxes and you just, you know, you wind up owing. You say, okay, I write a check or whatever it is. And I don't know anything about the safe harbor rules. I don't know that I'm supposed to. Are they going to bill me and say you owe $15 or
no,
whatever it is?
No, it goes down at the bottom of the return. If you're using a tax software It goes through, and if it doesn't know your last year's tax year, or if it doesn't have the information, or if you actually do owe the tax, it just slips it into a line. There's a section at the bottom of the page, towards the end, above your signature, says additional taxes. This is where your self, your additional, if you make more than $200,000 or $250,000 for a married couple, you pay your additional Social Security tax, Medicare tax, and things. So there's some additional taxes, penalties, penalties on early withdrawals from IRAs. All those go down at the bottom. And it just becomes part of your total tax bill.
They're looking at this year's tax return, and they're saying, you didn't withhold enough, so we're going to add this tax at the bottom of it.
Right.
But they may not know what you made last year.
They may not know your safe harbors.
Exactly. So you might say, well, you have to actually look for this and see if this was added, and then go back and figure it out.
When you receive your tax return from your tax preparer, you should look it over and say, okay, those incomes look realistic. But also look at the page on the back, especially if it's 1040, and look to see if there's any penalties in there. Because a lot of times the tax preparer doesn't know that you avoided the penalty because of something you did, but they didn't tell you about it, and it's there.
So I wonder, I should look. Is it listed as penalty, or it just says extra
under withholding penalty, I think is what it's called. I'll look it up.
Yeah, look it up and see. I'd be interested to see that. Okay. Everybody's thinking about taxes. It's tax time. Sure. 877-PLANNER, our number. It's time for you to give us a call. We got some trivia coming up. We got more of your emails and your phone calls. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing continues right after this. Market Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, here till the top of the hour. So if you have questions, concerns, comments about your money or anything else, you give us a call, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Emails, get to those, some more of those here in just a couple of seconds. And don't forget Portland this Saturday, right? It is Portland this Saturday.
This Saturday, yes.
Yes. Just another quick reminder for this Saturday, if you're in Portland or anywhere in the state of Oregon, or I would extend to Northern California or Washington. If you can't wait for the Northern California workshop.
It's a bit of a drive, but
it's a little bit, but you know, I'd say
from the top side of California, it might be closer to go to Portland than come down to the Bay Area.
It probably could be. If you're way up in
either way, it's a gorgeous drive.
Oh, absolutely. Go through the Redwoods and all that. Anyway, join the Brain Trust this Saturday in Portland. I would love to see you there at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can sign up at wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. Embassy Suites?
Yes.
There you go.
Washington Square.
Washington Square. Thank you. Tigered. It's the Portland, but it's Tigered.
Yes.
Okay. Sign up at wealthed.com. It's all free. Okay. Take care of that. Let's see. Coming up tomorrow on this program, the first segment or two, we're going to be talking about the benefits and risks of owning bonds. Here's something else that's a big question mark for a lot of people, and we do get questions on this all the time, which has to do with interest rates. Now, many people know that if you own bonds, if you have to sell them on the secondary market and interest rates have risen from the time that you own the bonds, you're going to lose money. It's as simple as that. As interest rates go up, the value of the bonds that you're holding is going down, and of course, vice versa. Well, where are we now? We are at historically low interest rates. In fact, I couldn't tell you the last time we were anywhere close. I think it was 1950. I had that stat somewhere here. The last time that interest rates were, you know, right around where they are now. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Historically low. So you would think that they're probably going to go up at some point.
Yeah, but we thought that when they were higher than they are today, 10 years ago.
Well, we did. And so, okay, so this, number one, proves that nobody knows the direction of interest rates. You cannot accurately predict it. Number two, you got to be ready just in case. So what happens? You own a whole portfolio of bonds, and interest rates go up, bonds that you bought fairly recently, what do you do with them? And do you keep them? Is there some way to hedge against this? Well, there are some strategies that you might want to consider. And we're going to bring up some of those strategies during the first hour of the program tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. Again, 877-PLANNER, our number. Trivia for today. Let's see. This from the National Bureau of Economic Research. That's right. The U.S. economy has been expanding since July 2009. And the expansion reached 78 months in length as of the end of the quarter, 2015, December 31st, a duration exceeded by just four other U.S. expansions since 1854, which by my math is 162 years ago. So what that says is, now obviously, I mean, they measure this by quarters, and so we'll have the next quarter at some point, but that's fairly long.
It is. But I mean, I wonder if they're going to also look at it as the size of the expansion compared to some of the previous. We've had shorter expansions that expanded a lot more than the expansion of the economy we've had over the last 78 months.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been a fairly anemic expansion.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, by textbook definitions,
we're expanding.
It's expanding.
You know, 1% is an expansion.
Right. But by practical for all practical purposes, it's not. I'm going to put this in perspective here.
So China's expansion?
Where was that? Oh, here it is. Yes, thank you. This is from the Department of Labor. This just happens to tie right into this. China's government announced on Saturday, a little while back, a growth target of 6.5% to 7% for its economy during calendar year 2016. Now, that's what
I think the Fed, the U.S. Fed, is trying to target, 2.5%?
Yeah, somewhere right around there.
They're failing at that, by the way.
Because they don't know what they're doing. Okay, the
Does
U.S.
anybody, though.
The U.S. economy has grown. Now that's 6.5%. That's what they want. The U.S. economy has grown by at least 6.5% during just one calendar year in the last 49 years.
Wow.
Since 1967. The only time it beat 6.5% was in 1984, when the economy grew 7.3%, kind of coming out of that late 70s, early 80s recession that we experienced. So it was quite a snapback. 7.3% in 1984. Remember 84?
Vaguely.
Do you remember just how good things seemed at the time? You know, there are periods of time where it just seems like everything's going to be rosy all the time.
It is the year I started dating my wife.
Okay, well, there you go.
Good year.
That was a good year for you. 7.3% in 1984. So I tell you what, I mean, China wants to expand by 6.5% to 7%. Let them do it. We can't necessarily.
We don't want to grow at 6.5% to 7%. That would cause problems on our side, too.
Well, you can't.
At least we think.
Expand necessarily that. Well, I don't know. Let's try it.
But they're also expanding from a very, you know, almost third world economy in certain parts of their country. At a fairly fast.
That's true.
They're industrializing faster than we did. Now, you go back into the 1800s, we may have had expansion at more than 7% back in those days.
Well, yeah, people were.
When we had the industrial revolution, and that's kind of what's happening over in China right now.
Well, and we actually thought that we were going to sustain that kind of growth in the late 90s, too, back when we were trying to expand the dot-com economy. Anyway, I'm not sure we can trust everything that comes out of China as far as.
Real numbers?
Their actual numbers.
They're not manipulated at all, are they?
Well, you wouldn't think so, but then again, it has been known to happen. Again. Anyway, okay. I got time for, I only got a minute, a little bit over a minute here. Do I have a quick email? I really can't. Some of these are a little bit long. So, I'll tell you what, if you've emailed us, we will answer more of the emails on the program tomorrow. And I want to remind you to stay tuned to the Social Security Show. Are we going to talk about WEP and GPO again, do you think?
Maybe, maybe not. We can find something else to talk about.
Well, once again, we get a lot of calls on WEP and GPO. We get a lot of calls on the new laws. If you need any direction on some of this stuff, you should tune into the Social Security Show. It happens on Tuesdays. We're doing it today because today's Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Just want to remind you of that. If you have questions on Social Security, the best thing to do is to email us because we will be reading some emails on the show. But we've also got phone calls, and we have a Social Security hotline set up. And again, all it is, it's just a recorded line. You call up. At the sound of the tone, just like you've done many times before, you leave us your question. You tell us it's 800-838-0483. Tell us what your situation is. Give us as much detail as you can, and we will answer the questions on the Social Security Show. Once again, it's at wealthed.com. Professor Plum and I will be doing this. It's about a half hour long, and we just jam a whole lot of information in there, and we think it's very helpful. So, Social Security Show Tuesdays only at wealthed.com. Out of time for this segment, this hour. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the Lucia Capital Group Brain Trust advisors by calling them at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including
including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.